Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Day 8 of the George Zimmerman trial, the man accused of killing teenager Trayvon Martin in a Florida suburb in February 2012. Patricia Williams from The Nation magazine, who writes the Mad Law Professor blog, has been watching the trial live, as has much of the country. She's here to talk about the latest twists and turns, as well as any big lessons that are starting to emerge about race and law and justice. Professor Williams, of course, also a Columbia University law faculty member. Professor Williams, welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you.
And the latest development of note seems to be the testimony of Officer Christopher Serino, the lead investigator in the case, mm-hmm. who interviewed George Zimmerman shortly after he shot and killed Trayvon Martin. Serino was called as a prosecution witness, but he testified on Monday that he felt Zimmerman was telling the truth when he said he'd fired a gun in self-defense. Did you see his testimony as supporting Zimmerman's account, and did it catch the prosecution dangerously off guard?
I don't think it caught the prosecution dangerously off guard. I do worry that the prosecution didn't object to it in a way that would contextualize what Officer Serino actually said. One of the features of the defense, and they're a very good defense team, is that they characterize and put words in the mouth of a variety of witnesses, and they certainly did that with Officer Serino's testimony. And what he said, I think, could be more generally characterized as his refusal to characterize it one way or the other. The defense attorney said, so there is nothing to contradict that he was telling the truth at this point in your interview, was there? I think that's and it was a question posed at the very end of the day. The jury was allowed to sit with it. And then the following morning, there was actually some retraction of the degree to which he testified.
Well,
the matter asserted.
In fact, the prosecution then came back the next day after the jury got to sit with it overnight and successfully argued that his statement should be disregarded. It was basically struck. So the objection was successful. But can a jury unhear a statement that dramatic at a judge's direction?
I was astounded, first of all, that there was no objection at the moment. Not just that statement, but the defense attorneys have consistently they're permitted a certain degree of leading questions on cross, but the degree to which they put words in the mouths of witnesses, and then there is no objection from the prosecution. So I think the prosecution is not as aggressive, let me put it as mildly as I can, as they might be. Anybody who follows trials knows that it's a strategy of certain defense attorneys to wait till the very end of the day to ask a really a question that will suggest things that the jury has to sit on overnight. Mm. And I thought that the subliminal, not so subliminal suggestiveness with which that day ended was quite astounding. And again, there was not a peep until the following morning.
Another key piece of Serino's testimony, he said that when he was interrogating Zimmerman, he lied and told Zimmerman the entire incident had been captured on videotape.
Serino
testified that Zimmerman seemed relieved at this prospect, implying that anyone who knew he'd committed murder wouldn't be relieved at the idea that it had been caught on tape. How significant a moment do you think that is for the jury?
Well, I think it was wrong to characterize it as relief. He's permitted to testify to what George Zimmerman might have said. He's permitted to testify, but he actually did characterize it as not just his belief, but that he was relieved. On the other hand, to be fair to Officer Serino, I think that was the defense's characterization of it. Throughout, Officer Serino was much more qualified. Qualified his characterizations of everything, and it was the defense attorney who pounded home.
You mean it was a question like, did Mr. Zimmerman seem relieved
That's what I mean.
I know people who are casually watching the trial and are mm-hmm. suspicious of Zimmerman who say that, well, that's just further evidence that he's a psychopath, that he was fully convinced he was doing the right thing when he murdered the unarmed Trayvon Martin. Is that kind of argument at all part of the prosecution's case?
You mean the argument that he's a psychopath?
Yes, and that even his expression of relief, if it's characterized that way, knowing the incident was videotaped when he was killing somebody, is an expression of a deranged state of mind, you know, indifferent to human life.
Well, that's ostensibly, you know, in order to prove second-degree murder, that's going to have to be part. I mean, and again, depravity is not necessarily the same as as being a psychopath. But it is a depraved disregard for human life.
Yes.
And so I think that's what they're trying to prove. I don't think they're trying to prove that he's a psychopath. I don't think they will be able to prove that. The standard of something that was so reckless and so disregarding is something that I think that they do have to live up to. And again, that's why I think that they need and have needed to be much more aggressive in their in sort of watching the defense characterize everything George Zimmerman did that night as simply something that a socially conscious neighborhood watchman would do, because I don't think it was. And I don't think they've made nearly enough of the relentless calls he made to the police department describing each and every, almost in identical terms. They have the calls.
Many people.
A black guy is coming. A black guy is coming. You know, he looks suspicious. What's he doing? He's walking. Everything a black guy did was always suspicious, no matter what they were doing, which is just walking down the street.
Right. Let me ask you to take a step back a bit and talk about the larger conversation that this trial touches on. I remember when you were on the show shortly after the shooting took place, and you said six words that just brought everybody up short. My son looks like Trayvon Martin.
Yeah.
And you said it before President Obama said it.
Yeah.
And really put it on everybody's mind and on everybody's lips. So take a step back and talk about the larger conversation that you think this trial touches on. Is the trial doing anything to advance the conversation around race and justice and the streets, or have we now gone to a whole other phase where it's just in the weeds, guilt or innocence of the individual?
Well, I think that there is a conversation going on within the trial, and that's why I don't think the prosecution has done a very good job of distinguishing which are parts of a generalized fear of young black men when they appear anywhere. What is the geography in which they have to stand their ground? Trayvon Martin lived. His father lived in this development. He had a right to be there. But there is a part of the conversation in which Trayvon Martin's presence is inherently suspect. And the degree to which when George Zimmerman is quoted by the neighbors, he's constantly referred to as the suspect. George Zimmerman refers to him in various phone calls and to the police as the perpetrator. There is a way in which Trayvon Martin is constructed as the defendant. In a way that I can't imagine a white teenager in the same situation, having been shot under these circumstances, would be characterized. This is to say, it would never happen, but certainly I think that this is a social presumption that young black men in particular have to struggle with. It is also, I think, rather astonishing that immediately after this happened, one of the neighbors testified that he came out of his house. He sees George Zimmerman, very few of the neighbors knew George Zimmerman per se. Mm. It's a large; they didn't know him, as to identify. They didn't know his name. They didn't know who he was. But when they saw Trayvon Martin lying on the ground, one neighbor testified, "Well, you know, George Zimmerman said I shot him." And then the question was, "Well, what did you say then? What was your next question?" The very next question out of the neighbor's mouth was, "What caliber?" I mean, that's stunning to me, that you have somebody who's
such
just
disregard.
With a gun that you don't know or don't know very well. And the first question is a conversational, oh, what caliber? It's like a hunting question.
Right. But are you haunted by the prospect that they may completely discredit George Zimmerman's perception of Trayvon Martin as a suspect? I think the prosecution has been going at that language as proving that he had some kind of bias or was doing some kind of profiling, that his perception could be completely discredited in court, but that if it's determined to the jury's satisfaction that Trayvon Martin turned on Zimmerman physically, even out of what might legitimately have been Trayvon's self-defense, and then Zimmerman killed him because he was being attacked, that he might go free anyway?
Yeah. And again, I think that that's part of the, although stand your ground is not being asserted per se in this case, the popularity of that law, the fact that it encompasses something like a perception, a social perception, the fact that the defense has, through its own questioning, introduced the fact that there was a tall, skinny young black man who was convicted of a burglary that occurred within this development. That's completely irrelevant. It's completely inappropriate. It got in through the mouth of, it was like the defense attorney was testifying as to this, that somehow that creates a basis for enough
reasonable
fear.
Reasonable suspicion.
Yeah, well, fear. Yeah, that is reasonable, that that's reasonably linked to run after or to encounter Trayvon Martin, and that it completely obliterates any defensive instincts on Trayvon Martin's part.
Before you go, I know you've been watching the trial on a live stream. Lots of people have been watching it on television, on cable. Do you think it's a good thing that this trial is on TV in real time?
I do think it's a good thing that it's on trial in real time. I don't feel that about every trial. I think actually this is one that people need to sit with and watch in its entirety. I'm very suspect, however, of the way in which some television stations have been cutting it up, reenacting, using it as some sort of fictive or reassembling it as a kind of fictive narrative arc that has nothing to do with what's actually going on in the trial.
Patricia Williams, Columbia University law professor and writer of the Mad Law Professor blog on the Nation magazine website. Thanks a lot for coming on with us.
Thank you, Brian.
And, of course, we'll continue to cover the developments in this trial as the trial goes on. Coming up next, an argument that AA, Alcoholics Anonymous, makes women vulnerable to assault. Stay with us.